Motion to approve the meeting minutes. Is there a motion on the table?
Mm-hmm. Second.
I moved to second.
Okay, so it was approved by Carol and seconded by Ellen Howe?
Yes.
Okay, so at this moment, I open it up for public comments from the audience that can be made on items not listed on the agenda that are of public interest or within the subject matter jurisdiction of the district. The committee has policy of limiting speakers to no more than 3 minutes. The committee cannot take action on items not listed on the agenda. Public input may be offered on an agenda item when it comes up for discussion. Are there any public comments at this time?
Just a reminder to any public members that are on, just be sure to raise your hand if you have a public comment.
Okay, so hearing none, we'll move on to old business. There's information on funding requests. Who's gonna give us the information?
I didn't put anything in the packet because we really are, it's kind of quiet. It's on hold, verbal. So I was just gonna do a quick verbal. The only couple of LOIs that are still on hold are Jocelyn and Mizell. And with their offices, their centers being closed, we're just waiting to see what's gonna happen next. When everybody opens back up, and we can go from there on looking at their LOI.
Okay. And do we have information on the grant payment schedule?
It's in your packet on page 6. If anybody has any questions on that,
I have a question.
Okay.
I see that we have unexpended funds in the grant payment schedule. Are any of those in process, or is there any idea about how those funds may be awarded?
Well, we do have 2 pending grant applications today, but that's something that Conrado is going to be addressing later on in the in the program.
Okay.
I have a question. What was the ultimate outcome of the FIND funding request from our last meeting?
It was approved for the full amount.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Does anybody else have a question about the payment schedule? Is that a yes or no?
No.
Okay, so we'll be moving on to COVID-19 grant funding update. Who will be letting us know the information about that?
It's a nice little recap that was done by Erica with input from Alejandro and Megan. You can see that we had the original funding was 12 out of 15 requests. This was the collaborative funding between the Desert Healthcare District and Regional Access Project Foundation. You'll see on page 7 the organizations that were awarded contracts by each organization, by the district and by the Regional Access Project Foundation. And on the second page, page 8, we had some $85,000 left over. So we reopened up the RFP. And these are the results of who was awarded. So for COVID-19 emergency response funding between collaborative effort between the district and Regional Access Project Foundation. I don't know if anybody has any questions.
Does anybody have any questions about the information provided?
No.
Board members?
Yes.
No questions?
Can you hear me? I have trouble. Hello?
Yeah.
Hello.
Okay. Thank you. We
these were supposed to be $10,000 grants. We've awarded 11. Are $1,000 over?
No, they were either not to exceed 10,000 or some were even awarded 5,000. We didn't put the amounts in there, and I apologize for that. We can do that if you want to. I can email you those amounts that were awarded.
Yeah, just for clarity and transparency. Yeah.
I don't think they're on the grant payment schedule yet, because that was the grant payment schedule ended April 30th, so it will be on the next payment schedule. But I can do that for you, Karen. I can email. And anybody else would like to know what the amounts are, too.
Thank you, Donna.
You're welcome.
Does anybody else have comments? No? Hearing no more comments, we'll move on to new business. Number one says consideration to approve grant 1085 for Olive Crest Treatment Center, general support for mental health services to vulnerable children.
This is a request amount for $50,000. Funding is specifically going to cover the support costs for the local psychiatrists and their nursing services with their travel expenses for telepsychiatry appointments and in-home visits. Tracy Fitzsimmons, who's the executive director, and Teresa McKinley, who's the regional project director, are on the phone if you have any, or on the Zoom meeting if you have any questions in regards to the grant application and budget, which is in your packet. And Tracy and Teresa, can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, who's this? Tracy?
Thank you, this is Tracy, I'm sorry. Am I on video? I don't think that I am.
I don't know if the committee members have any questions or if there's anything you wanted to add that you covered it pretty well in the application.
But. Yes, we're just very grateful for consideration.
Okay, does anybody have questions for her?
I have a question. This is Carol. Hi. I'm just wondering about the practitioners that you have. I know that we have a shortage of mental health practitioners in the Valley. Have you been successful in attracting qualified practitioners?
Yes, as a matter of fact, we have a great internship program, which has really been kind of a feeder program into our clinical positions from Cal Baptist University, University of California, Riverside, and to a smaller degree at La Sierra University.
And then do you have a charge for the service to the families that need it?
No, there's no charge for the services. It's a contract that we have through Department of Public Social Services and Riverside University Health Systems combined. That kind
of. And then how do you get your referrals?
Through the county, through the Department of Public Social Services.
Okay. Do you work with the local hospitals or local health centers?
We do in a lot of our other programs, of course. And we also just work with them in terms of if they come in with a clinician already that they're seeing or a psychiatrist already that they're seeing, that's a collaborative effort that we have with the team, between the team and that practitioner.
Mm-hmm. I noticed the grant said it includes travel expenses for telepsychiatry appointments.
Does that work?
I don't understand how you would have a travel expenses.
We have telepsychiatry and telehealth, but we also have in-home visits. And most of our visits are in the home, except with the psychiatrist. The psychiatrist is done through telehealth.
I see.
Probably just COVID, a lot of our
money. Yeah. It's travel expenses for the in-home visits.
Correct. Yes.
Okay. And with COVID, do you have a problem with in-home visits?
Yes, we have. We've been doing most of our visits via telehealth through virtual conferencing, Zoom conferencing, and all of the HIPAA compliant kinds of platforms that we've had to hustle and get into place. When there's a level of acuity that reaches a certain degree, we're in the home regardless, and have had to do in-home visits throughout this duration of COVID, but the majority of what we're doing right now, we're going to be starting to phase in next week, one to two days a week, and starting to scatter our schedules. But the majority of what we've done through this COVID time has been through telehealth.
I don't understand how telehealth would work with families that may not have a computer. How does that work?
We've done through their phone, and we've also assisted them with getting Chromebooks and workbooks. Teresa, do you know all of our kids have access to a phone, no doubt, but have we gotten some additional grant funding?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
We've there's a program called iFoster, and they were offering free iPhones and other Apple devices to foster youth. So we were able to access a good amount of technology for the families. Those that were having difficulty utilizing it, we were able to help them through the CFT process, the child and family team process, use the technology. So we were able to access resources for the youth and families.
Let's see. Thank you.
Okay. Does anybody else?
From Barbara Sinatra, Children's Center.
I'm sorry, what was the question?
Do you get referrals from Barbara Sinatra's Children's Center?
Yeah, we work in collaboration with them. We do, and we definitely call them in. We have a good relationship with John and Denise over there.
Okay. Does anybody else have any questions?
No.
No.
Do I have a motion on the table to approve?
I make a motion to approve.
Do I have a second?
I second.
Do we do roll call?
Andrea, you're on.
We don't normally do roll call, I didn't think, for our program committee meetings. All of these motions and the actions that the committee is approving are forwarded to the board.
Okay.
We don't normally do a roll call.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so
This is advisory committee.
Okay, so that grant is forwarded to the board for approval?
Aye. Right.
Oh, all those in favor?
Yes.
Aye.
Thumbs
up.
Sorry, guys.
No, Nicholas is funny. He goes, thumbs up.
Oh. So that motion has passed to the board now, right? So we're moving on to the second grant.
Thank you, Casey. Thank you, Teresa. Next stop is the board meeting.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
In touch.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
So we'll be moving on to consideration to approve grant 1057, Desert Cancer Foundation Patient Assistance Program.
Yes. Sarah Bryant, who's the executive director, should also be on the phone. This is for $150,000 for patient assistance. It's going to requested funding is utilized to pay for cancer care services and navigation for uninsured and underinsured residents who need assistance for insurance premiums, coinsurance, copays, deductibles, prescriptions, chemotherapy, radiation, screenings, diagnostics, et cetera. And she being Sarah, also we included in the staff report, how they are have been able to leverage the dollars that they receive from the negotiated rates and from the local medical community on the money that leverages with it. And Sarah, I don't know, there she is. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, how are you all doing today?
Good, how are you? So, anybody has any questions for Sarah? You know, it's kind of a little history thing. We used to, we, the Desert Healthcare Foundation, in, had for years, 1997, had a fund called the Suzanne Jackson Breast Cancer Fund, which paid for mammograms screenings for underinsured and uninsured, underinsured and uninsured residents. And in 2005 is when the board, at the time, Desert Healthcare Foundation board, decided to spin off all the foundation programs. And Desert Cancer Foundation took over the Suzanne Jackson Breast Cancer Fund. This is, but we've been very good partners with the district. And so, if anybody has any questions, Sarah's there to answer them.
So I have a question. This is Yvette.
Yes.
So in the information that you provided, it will only be for the original five zones?
That is correct. So we are not requesting funding to serve the entire region. We have additional funds that we're leveraging to serve those other areas. We know that Desert Healthcare District has only so much allocated funds to serve all of these zones. And we've been able to do this in the past. This is one way that we were able to leverage funding that was given to us by Desert Healthcare District to serve the entire Coachella Valley. We use a lot of the other funds that we raise through other grant programs, other cities that serve other portions of the valley.
Okay, so it'll be something that will be taking care of the whole Coachella Valley, not just us.
Correct. So our entire program will cover the entire Coachella Valley, but the funding we're requesting will only serve specific areas in the zones indicated.
Okay, thank you. Does anybody else have questions?
How are people made aware of your services?
Through a variety of different avenues. Primarily, when an individual is diagnosed with cancer or is in need of a cancer screening or diagnosis, usually they contact their provider and they're going through that avenue. And it is usually at that point, before you're able to even start a cancer treatment, your provider's office, you will generally meet with a social worker or a financial counselor or both, and they're going to ask you, how are you intending to pay for this? They're not going to start chemotherapy or radiation generally if you don't have a plan in place. And this is where those social workers and financial counselors can explain to them the increased costs that are going to be placed upon them and the unknowns as well, because with cancer care, it's not like there's a set amount of money that their care is going to cost. And at that point is when they are referred to Desert Cancer Foundation. Oftentimes, however, at the time that someone is diagnosed and they're going through that process with their social worker, the individual may think, well, I'm still working, I'm still going through this, this is not bad, I'm gonna continue working. We can financially afford this. I've got great health insurance, and that's great. But for example, in the situation that we're in now with COVID-19, what we're finding is a lot of folks are losing their jobs and therefore losing their health insurance. And they're not going to qualify for Medi-Cal, and they're in that in between with their being generally middle to lower class financially, that cannot afford to pay for a health insurance premium monthly out of pocket. And so they'll start researching, how can they get copay assistance? How can they get health insurance premium assistance prescriptions? And then they come across us. So we have information available in both cancer centers here in the Coachella Valley. And we work very closely with both of the cancer care centers, as well as City of Hope, as well as a few others outside of the Coachella Valley. I will mention that we do provide for cancer care for patients that whose cancer care is not available in Coachella Valley. They have a unique form of cancer that has to be treated, say, at City of Hope or UC San Diego, UCLA, and several other hospitals throughout the Southern California region. and we will continue to pay for their cancer care as long as they're a resident of our service area.
Thank you. That was very helpful.
My pleasure.
Does anybody else have a question?
Just an FYI, you've probably seen in your packet, I came across this article, and Allison Sachs, who is with Eisenhower, Lucy Kirchy, alluded to it, but I had asked Sarah if this was a problem here in the Coachella Valley with financial toxicity, that the providers will not talk to the cancer patients how much a lot of this stuff is going to cost. And Sarah had mentioned it. Had said yes, that it's still a huge problem here as well.
That is correct. It is a continued issue that a lot of our providers that we work with, not necessarily in the hospital systems, but some of the private oncology offices who aren't aware of what resources are available for their patients. And the cost of their cancer care, the doctor is not aware of those oftentimes, and doesn't have the, if they don't have the staff that have the capacity and the knowledge and the experience of discussing financial concerns with patients, that is to the disadvantage of the patient and the community as a whole. It's something that Desert Cancer Foundation, through not only patient navigation, but the work that I do in partnership with our providers and expanding our relationships with pharmacies and doctor's offices, is something that I try and educate their offices upon.
This is Carol. I had a question. What if your request for a financial assistant exceeds the budget that we've given you? Is there a way for you to come back to us and ask for more funding?
I'm sorry, if the amount exceeds the amount that you can fund at this time, or?
Right.
Yes. We would come back to ask for more funding if that was an option.
Thank you.
You're usually pretty good about utilizing every penny.
That is true. We most certainly do. One thing you may have read in the application, but I'll reiterate, is our ability to leverage the funding that we have. The cost of cancer care for what a patient would pay, or if they were privately insured, versus what Desert Cancer Foundation is able to pay for someone when they are in need, is significantly less. Every dollar translates to $10 or more in cancer care, oftentimes even more so. It depends upon the service that's provided. But Desert Cancer Foundation takes it a step further by not only assisting with the cost of their cancer care, but that patient navigation piece, to leverage other resources and connect our clients to make sure that all of their needs are being met, not only for the individual, but it affects the entire family. So cancer isn't just the individual and their cancer care, but also their ability to put food on their table and feed their families. And in times even more like this, Desert Cancer Foundation is taking every opportunity to really expand and leverage our ability to serve our clients, because they're needing us more than ever.
Does anybody else have any questions? Hearing none, I'll ask if there's a motion on the table for approval.
A motion to approve.
Is there a second?
I'll second. This is Carol.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay, that grant is forwarded to the board meeting for approval.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sarah. Pleasure to work with you all.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we'll move on to nonprofit organizations community survey findings.
I think Megan's going to take this one away.
Yes, that'll be me. Andrea, I think you have to stop sharing yours so I can pull up the PowerPoint. Thank you. Can everyone see the PowerPoint?
Yes.
Perfect. Yes. All right, so I'm just going to talk you through a survey that we released last week and gathered some results. Before we dive into our responses and the results, I kind of want to give just a little bit of intro as to why we have decided to do this impact survey. As you know, I mean, people are in kind of crisis mode, trying to figure out how to react to this, how to respond. And we really wanted to just get a quick look from our nonprofits in the Coachella Valley. How are, you know, how are they dealing with this? How are their organizations operations being impacted? How have they had to kind of switch their services and programs and staffing? And then help to use our results to inform future funding, as well as just for informational, to get our discussions going among board members and staff about future funding recommendations and outcomes for next fiscal year, and try to use this information just to help shed light on the prioritizing and understanding the needs, the recovery needs, as well as the sustainability needs of our nonprofits in the Valley. And as all of you are very aware, we did do a lot of response funding in the last couple of months that was just under $1.6 million. And not including what was just approved a couple of minutes ago, we had about $1.2 million remaining. And that is being discussed about how to use that funds to help support the community the best way we can, and how we use this information to both recover and rebound from the COVID and help sustainability in the future. So even though our survey was a kind of a just a really quick, only open for a few days, we did have 48 respondents, which just shows how engaged our nonprofits are and looking for, you know, providing information to inform us, as well as just looking for all the funding opportunities and staying connected with one another. So we were really pleased with that level of response. One of the first questions we asked was just trying to get an understanding of target populations of these organizations that responded. It was a select all that apply, as many of our nonprofits serve various client groups. This is just shows you the top 10, seniors being the first one with 28, marking that this was one of their target populations, followed by youth, LGBTQ, individuals with chronic conditions, veterans, the younger children, 0 to 5 age, homeless individuals with HIV and AIDS, clients with developmental disabilities, and then as well as farm worker communities. There were a lot of others that were mentioned that had only received one vote, things such as the business community. There was some animal welfare, as well as a high school and college student target population. So we did receive quite a variation in respondents. Next question we did ask was just to get a sense of their organizational focus, and overwhelmingly it was human services, with 26 saying that was one of their main focuses. Again, it was a select all apply, as many of them do multiple things. And then following human services was education, behavioral and mental health, food services, recreation, and so forth down the list. There was also a lot of just one vote items, including advocacy, some water infrastructure, business development, legal assistance. And I do want to note that not all the respondents to this survey were doing focuses that aligned with the mission and vision of the district, such as the water infrastructure and like specifically advocacy and things like that. So we did get quite a variation. We, to get a sense of the revenue sources of our organizations, we did ask for them to provide their annual operating revenue. As you can just kind of see on the left there, a little bit more than half were under the 1 million of annual operating revenue, with a few larger ones over the 5 million mark. So we did get some variation there. And we also, to try to get an understanding of where a lot of these organizations receive their revenue, we did ask for them to provide some of their primary and secondary and third revenue sources. The first one was grants, and then followed quickly with fee-for-services. And then the second one was special events and grants, and then the third, individual contributions and special events. And one thing we just wanted to point out with this was the percentage of revenue that comes from these special events. As many of you are very aware, there have been a lot of fundraising event cancellations in the spring. So looking at how that's going to impact these nonprofits in the future and ways that they're going to be able to make up for that is going to be important to try to understand, as a lot of them have moved to online events and trying to get creative that way during this time of social distancing. Then we kind of moved into more COVID-specific questions, just getting a sense of who's actually opening and operating right now. Overwhelmingly, most of our organizations that responded are still operating and open, with 42 saying yes. And then asking which organizations are specifically providing COVID services, about 75% did say yes. And the no ones, although they're still open, they just were trying to maintain their services, but not specifically doing COVID response. So they were still open while trying to maintain some of their services and programs. To get a further look at their economic impact, we asked what percentage of their organization is being impacted during this time because of this public health crisis. And you can see about one third, that orange section of the pie, 41% to 60% of the respondents say that's about the range that their organization is being impacted. So, you know, we're looking at 50% or more almost. And then just dive a little bit deeper, we did ask, you know, what are the reasons for the financial impact? And there is, when we look at respondents from things such as the food services, there is an increased demand for services that they weren't, you know, projecting or prepared for, as the food lines and need for home delivery and such have been improved or increased. And then, like I just mentioned, the cancellation of these major fundraising events has really impacted these organizations' projected budgets. The closing of resale stores, some of our organizations use those as revenue to support their programs. So having all those be closed because of the restrictions in place has had a major impact on their revenue. And additional expenses relating to cleaning proper PPE and to making sure that all staff and clients are as safe as possible, as well as not being able to rent out rooms and facilities for events and conferences, and decreased membership. Individual donations have decreased because people have been impacted in every way possible, as well as reduced volunteers and shortened hours of operations and loss of fee-for-services. These were one of the things that was mentioned by the respondents. We did ask a question looking at which organizations have received funding for COVID-specific services. And we did ask for them to share the amount just to get a sense of what kind of funding is coming into the Valley outside of what the district and other organizations that we're aware of. A lot of this, our respondents shared that they have received funding from the Payment Protection Program. One of the organizations did receive a big HRSA grant funding. Our Desert Healthcare District Emergency Response Fund was mentioned several times, as well as the collaborative fund the district has with RAP. Some smaller foundation funding came in, as well as Nonprofit Insurance Alliance in the Riverside County. Of those that gave a specific amount, it did total just over $6.6 million. But again, that, you know, that number is underrepresented. It's only the total of those who actually provided a specific number, as well as, you know, those who responded to our survey. And I do want to note that 30% of our respondents, so that's 15 organizations, said that they have received zero funding for the COVID response. So the $7 million almost is going, coming from about 35 organizations. So just kind of shows that there is a lot of money coming into the Coachella Valley. Obviously there's still a lot more needed, but you know, there's a lot of different funding sources coming to the Valley. So we just wanted to point some of that out. And then looking at the operational impact, we did ask what organizations have had to furlough or lay off staff. And about 17 organizations, a little bit over a third, said they have had to, and surprisingly, about 65% said they have not had to, which, you know, I think is pretty good during something like this and people having to adjust their, you know, programs and services and closing their doors. We did ask for those that did say yes, they had to furlough employees if they could share with us how many, and this is part-time and full-time workers. In total, from those 17 organizations, they've had to furlough or lay off 581 employees. Just to make sure that number is not misrepresented, 42% of that did come from one organization, and that was an organization that has a lot of resale stores that opened that had to close because of the stay-at-home order and all the restrictions that are in place. But just wanted to point that out. And to further understand this question and dive a little bit deeper, we asked, you know, how, if you could have anything, like, how could you rehire these employees and get your operations back going with this, the staff that you had before this crisis? And the main thing, you know, you could guess is revenue and funding. Some of them just said simply time, so they could get their services and programs back to full capacity and running smoothly. Reopening different stores, just simply having the shelter in place orders lifted. And there was a couple that did mention they were going to need to do some internal assessments to understand, you know, what their staffing is going to look like as they revamp and possibly have to change certain programs and services, making them virtual versus in-person, and adapting that way. We did ask these organizations to share, you know, what are they primarily doing during this COVID crisis for their clients in the community. There was a lot of simply just providing education, making sure that there was resources available for people to understand in various languages and trying to hit all the populations. A lot of food distribution, telehealth services, youth recreational, virtual activities, just try to get kids and families active in the home, behavioral health counseling services, as you know, a lot of people are in isolation, they're at home by themselves, you know, there could be anxiety and things with that. A lot of, you know, just direct testing, case management, employment assistance, kind of tying that back to the resources, childcare for essential workers, or some advocacy, making sure that people have the resources and needs that they should, and so forth, looking at personal protection equipment and support groups for helping, you know, get everyone through this. So there was quite a variation that in the respondents we did receive. We asked, what are their, you know, their sustainability recovery plans in place? There were several organizations that had talked that they were going to, you know, relook at their strategic plans and see what areas they may need to revise while still remaining true to their mission and vision and what they're good at, but just how they can tweak to make sure that they can still, you know, support the community the best they can. Converting to virtual services, the recreational organizations looking at non-contact sports and also, you know, different means on the internet, making sure they can implement all the safety procedures when we look to reopen a little bit further. Again, back to that fundraising, there's a lot of, you know, people are trying to get creative and looking at different means to make up for what has been lost, and cutting expenses wherever possible, collaborating and building meaningful partnerships with other organizations that are working to target the same populations with similar missions. You know, how can they work together and still support the community the best they can? There were a couple mentioning that they want to make sure that they're prepared for a possible second wave with their programs and staffing, and simply increasing outreach efforts and increasing social distance learning and services. And lastly, we did ask if there's anything they wanted to directly share to funders. And there was a lot of people mentioning that they want to funding to be focused on core operating support versus programmatic support, just so these people can, you know, get their organization back running full capacity so they can serve the clients that they were serving before everything happened, providing technical assistance and infrastructure. There's several that mentioned budget assistance, more along the lines of they're unsure about how to project, you know, a next year budget with the so much uncertainty that is still happening. And flexibility with reporting and things like that. Continuing to disseminate safety procedures and resources like our CVHIP and the Desert Healthcare District resource page. And there was a couple that mentioned that, you know, the COVID recovery funding is extremely important, but they didn't want all funding to be directed towards that. There needs to be some that still follows our other health priorities that may not fall on the COVID recovery, so it doesn't lose those organizations that aren't providing COVID-specific resources. And then creating a funding resource hub, which actually the Inland Empire Collaborative has a funding page that lists like various grants, national, regional, state level funding sources available. So maybe it's working to just make sure that's always up to date and shared with our nonprofits. And then also looking at short-term and long-term recovery. In following this, we will be presenting the same information to the Strategic Planning Committee, as well as kind of looking at our community health needs assessment and health improvement plan and how that's not going to be, you know, completed until early next year, at the end of this year, depending on how things happen and how that's going to drive this funding for that next year. But in the meantime, we kind of had this gap year and looking at how we can help with COVID recovery and, you know, just supporting the community the best we can. So also in the strategic planning, there'll be various like funding recommendations and outcomes just for discussion among board members about how to handle this next fiscal year funding. So that kind of concludes my presentation. Be happy to answer any questions. I know it's kind of a lot, tried to go through it a little bit quickly, but be happy to answer any questions.
Good job, Megan.
Thanks. Good job.
Thank you, Megan.
Very good job.
I have a question. This is Alan.
I'm glad.
Does any of this information, how are organizations that are dealing or helping to deal with homelessness? Because I didn't really see that pop up. Has there been an impact on these kind of organizations who are treating homelessness in the COVID environment? I ask this because, like, just today I was out biking and my bike path goes underneath the Gene Autry Bridge. And there were and I go there all the time. There's usually not many people there, but there were like eight today. Or since the COVID shelter in place kind of began, I live relatively close to a business and now there are people living in the dumpster enclosure. So I'm just wondering if there's some kind of way of assessing how is this impacting that community?
We did have we had Coachella Valley Rescue Mission and Martha's Village and Kitchen respond to the survey. We had, I think, 14 organizations that said they have some way service the homeless population. And I think also, and then with the district providing their 75 grand, 25 to each of the shelters, some of the comments that were made specifically for this survey was just that they are running at full capacity and they're just making, they're having to spend more time to making sure that all safety procedures are in place. And I'm not sure, Donna, because if you want to shed a little bit more light on specifically the homeless, but with this survey, they were just saying they're running at full capacity and they need to learn, you know, it's hard to predict what's going to keep happening, especially with the heat coming. Well, it's already came, but
That's the one concern is going to be the cooling centers. But, you know, just even when we were doing the collective fund with Regional Access Project Foundation, one of the recipients was well in the desert, and they are actually practicing social distancing with their meals and when they're standing in line to get their food. And anecdotally, a couple weeks ago, I was talking to Doug Morin from Volunteers of Medicine. They have their street medicine program, and they've been going out and doing testing, and they were coming up negative, and they were also saying that they were kind of socially isolating themselves, just staying. They didn't want anybody coming into their encampments or anything. Greg is on the phone, Greg Rodriguez, to respond to when we go to the foundation. I don't know if, Greg, you can hear us, if there's something you wanted to add to that. Maybe not. Maybe can't hear.
Yeah.
Oh, there you are. Hey.
The panelists.
Hi, Greg.
Hi, everybody. Donna, first of all, you're right. What even the county did and has done a couple encampment outreaches, and we've basically been told to stay out because the people in the encampments are afraid of getting anything from people outside. And then additionally, you know, luckily, most of our, not all of our nonprofits still have the majority of their funding in place because they get it through HUD funding, other government programs that have not been cut. Additionally, too, is the county, through our Emergency Operations Center, has been probably one of the biggest programs we've been running outside of food distribution is the Project Room Key program, where we've housed over 380, I think, as of today, individual homeless people in hotels. Full meals, they're getting medical care as they need, and then additionally, we're doing complete exit plans to get them into permanent housing. We've already placed 10 individuals. About 100 of those individuals are out here in the Coachella Valley. So the kind of broader answer to the question is the homeless service providers haven't been impacted too much, primarily, again, because funding has remained steady. What we're working on, and I'll bring up during the foundation, is, you know, again, the cooling centers and how we address that as well.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome.
Yeah, this is Nick Behrman. I had two questions. One is the Palm Springs Chamber, I believe it's the Chamber, has asked, did a survey of businesses for what kind of supplies and equipment they will be needing for reopening, and with the idea of perhaps doing bulk purchasing and so forth. Was that involved at all in organizations with cooperation with each other, nonprofits, to see if there is any way of combining spending? And then I have one other question.
I don't know anything about that.
Okay. The other question I had is there any effort being thought of to help people who are now unemployed to deal with the emotional impact of that and help them as they begin to think about reemployment and where to go and so forth? I don't know if that's handled on a state basis, on a county. Maybe I'm not articulating the question.
No, you are.
This is Greg, can you hear me?
Yeah.
So any workforce retraining or workforce development is primarily handled through the county, through our workforce department.
Okay, great, thank you.
I think a lot of our nonprofits are also going to some of the, like we mentioned, the telehealth, and so there's, here with Olive Crest, you know, the mental health to help with things. And Lift to Rise has also got an economic, Colorado's economic protection package, what they're calling it, where they're offering different kinds of relief in that respect as well.
Yeah, United Way of the Desert also has a program that they launched. So there are several resources out there for folks. You know, JFS of the Desert is also doing, you know, telehealth counseling. So there are different, you know, resources in the community to assist in these kind of challenges that a lot of our community members are going to be facing when they want to re-enter the workforce or currently dealing with maybe a loss of job that comes with insurance, income, et cetera. So there are some resources out there for that kind of help.
We haven't tapped into it, but I'm sure a lot of the faith-based organizations are also working with offering counseling as well.
One other question, and that is, I found this fascinating and very helpful to understand what's happening among these organizations. The material is going through the Strategic Planning Committee. Is there any thought given to sharing this information, like through the Desert Sun or something, to let people know what's happening in the Valley?
Well, we're going to present it here and then the Strategic Planning Committee, and then make it public, more public to other members. We're also in touch with UCR Center for Social Innovation. They're also doing an IE survey tackling some of the similar questions. So we're going to, and we've been talking with them about getting them to share their results that are specific to the Coachella Valley, and then also sharing the results of our survey and seeing some overlap and how best we can use that information and this one to you know, look at future funding and discussion.
Okay, thank you.
This is Carol. I had a question. You know, I'm wondering, this is a survey of our nonprofit organizations, and I'm wondering if there's a deeper dive survey to see what the actual impact is within the community. You know, I'm thinking that as of the first of the month, there are a lot of people who can't afford their rent, and are they susceptible to being evicted? We know that there's a lot of food insecurity out there. The lines at the centers are just, you know, miles long. And then how many people lost their medical insurance? You know, I'm wondering if there's a deeper dive within the community that we could figure out what the actual impact is.
I know with Lift to Rise and their economic protection plan, in some of the questions they ask the families when they're reaching out for this $200 assistance, they do have some of those questions. And Alejandro, you might be able to speak to this more, which they are, but they release, is it weekly updates on who's been asked and, you know, if what impact they've had to their families and some of the barriers that they're having to receiving like food and other assistance. So that's one thing to look at.
Mm-hmm.
We can't. Alejandro, you're on mute.
I'm sorry. Yes, you are correct, Megan. You know, the Live to Rise Economic Protection Plan does provide, you know, the $200 assistance, but along with that, a lot of their, you know, volunteers that are assisting these community members, you know, with the application process, they are asking them, you know, those kind of questions, Director Rogers. And there is a report that they publish every week, I believe, about some of those challenges that our community members are facing outside of the economic, impact that the COVID-19 epidemic is having on them. So I could download and get the latest report, and I could forward that to the board if that would be something that you guys would like to look at.
Mm-hmm. I'm also curious, you know, organizations like Housing First, has their request for assistance increased? Are Jewish Family Services, in the desert, they all get requests from families to help with their rent. I'm wondering if there's any data there.
It's a good question. I think we could definitely reach out to them. But we know that, you know, through the grants that we have approved, they are highlighting some of those needs within the application. So we know that the need is definitely out there.
Thank you.
Will they be coming back to us and requesting more funding?
That's a great question.
I was gonna say, Carol, I don't know if the Department of Housing can help at all, but for instance, in Chicago, they gave out grants, the Department of Housing, to more than 2,000 people for those that need it so that they could pay their rent money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it can be at a broader scale, you know, other than just locally also.
So I can address a little bit of this too. On the eviction thing, the governor has already said that evictions are placed on hold. For 90 days. There are some concerns about how strong that language is. And so the supervisor presented, losing my train of thought, ran something through the board that we have our housing authority and legal counsel working on some better language that kind of mirrors what like Palm Springs and Coachella have done. On the, as far as rental assistance, we are actually working on a plan right now to utilize either some CARES funding or CDBG funding to start a rental assistance plan through state money that we got. So that's hopefully rolling out in the next week or so. And then we are seeing a rise in requests to the health insurance. Carol, that was a great question. Our number of Medi-Cal applications have increased almost twofold over last year. So if people are falling out, we're doing everything we possibly can to get them linked back into healthcare, as well as CalFresh, as well as general assistance, et cetera. And then what we really tried to focus on and working primarily with the state elected officials is getting as many people signed up for unemployment as possible, especially with the federal credit that's coming with that. It's really helping to keep people afloat. So that's just a few of the things we're working on.
Thank you.
How much money do you have from the CARES Act to put into housing?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure the exact amount on that. I'll find out though. So.
Okay. Does anybody else have any more questions?
Just a request, I guess, if we can go back to Headed Way, Live Rise, and figure out if they do need more funding. I know that those $200 have gone like very far in my community. I've heard of multiple people who like that literally has been the saving grace for like the last ways to patch up their rent and things of that nature. I think now United Way has like a $500 fund and it's only for 300 families. So it's a lot, but it's not a tremendous amount. And then the last point is the City of Indio is considering putting in the $500,000 they received from the CARES Act with United Way or something to that effect. Can we match? Is there something else? Can we have other cities put in matching funds? I don't know, something, right? How is it that we can support people to stay in their homes? We have a very significant program to alleviate homelessness across the Coachella Valley. Whatever we do now to support people in alleviating rent burden will help us in the long term. Ensure that many people don't end up on the streets more than there already are currently, and we just can't do a good job of taking care of them as is. Add a whole second wave to that. It'll be really detrimental. So anyways, all I'm asking is if we can go back to United Way and have a conversation, United Way Lift to Rise, have a conversation with them, figure out, do you need more funding? Is it appropriate? Is it not? And if it's not, great. But if it is, can we get a proposal back either from them or the staff with the $1.2 million that we have sort of left over? It doesn't have to be all of it. Some if they need it.
So, Director Borja, we're working on that.
So, excuse me, can someone please mute yourself? There's background noise, someone's TV, television, or radio. Thank you.
So, yes, we're working on it. We're working on more than one project that is related to the economic recovery, understanding that we have 1.2 million that we have not allocated yet. And that is one. There is also an opportunity to work with grant makers concerned with immigrants and refugees, because that is another population that can hardly access any type of assistance that the federal government or the state government is offering, and we want to make sure that that population as well gets some assistance in our valley. And Lift to Rise and other organizations here in Coachella Valley are working to secure some of that funding. Remember that the governor announced that there was going to be a fund to assist that population, and now some of that funding is in limbo because of a legal challenge, but we're exploring ways in which we can assist that population as well.
When do you think you can have a report, summary, something for us?
For the next board meeting. So we're working diligently to have something done within the next 7 days.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Okay, are there any more questions or comments?
No.
Okay, so then I'm going to adjourn the program meeting at 101 and go into the next meeting. Is everybody ready to start the next meeting?
Yeah.
Yes, go ahead.
So I'm calling to
Yvette.
Huh?
Can you see the agenda?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect.
So I'm calling to order the meeting, the program committee foundation meeting. At 102. Do I have a motion to approve the agenda?
A motion to approve.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay. Moving on to the meeting minutes. Do I have a motion to approve the meeting minutes?
I motion to approve.
Is there a second?
I'll second. This is Carol.
Okay. So we'll move on to public comments. At this time, comments from the audience may be made on items not listed on the agenda that are of public interest and within the subject matter jurisdiction of the district. The committee has a policy of limiting speakers to not more than 3 minutes. The committee cannot take action on items not listed on the agenda. Public input may be offered on an agenda item when it comes up for discussion or action. Does anybody have any comments? Seeing that nobody has comments, we'll move on to new business, CVHIP COVID-19 analytics update.
Hello, everybody. Just want to give you a quick verbal report on some of the activities that we're currently undertaking regarding CVHIP. CVHIP has been in the forefront of identifying services and programs that are currently being offered to the community by our community partners. We have been able to create some identifying tags and included also some keywords into the algorithm, into the search engine. So when our community members are searching for COVID-19 specific services, the first wave of results on the landing, on the results page are actually those COVID-19 response programs and services. So we are working every week, you know, to identify those programs and services that are coming up. We have put some of the more accessible programs and services on our CVHIP landing page at a glance. We are in the process of updating with a new list. I emailed Ian Bertha, who is our software developer, and we should have a new list updated on our landing page here shortly. Both in English and Spanish. So we, like I said, you know, I'm working to identify those services as they come up. We were also able to provide some funding to 7 local organizations that have been using CVHIP to connect, you know, their participants with additional services that are not provided in-house. So we were able to provide a $1,500 grant to 7 local organizations, which are the Desert Cancer Foundation, the LGBTQ Center of Palm Springs, Martha's Village and Kitchen, JFS of the Desert, Desert AIDS Project, the AIDS Assistance Program, and Mama's House. So they are going to be receiving these grant funds to assist with their technology upgrades. Some of them have requested to purchase, you know, laptops or tablets that their personnel could use out in the field or when they're working from home to continue, you know, connecting community residents to CVHIP services. You know, trainings are still ongoing on CVHIP. Now we're doing them via Zoom, which tend to work, you know, fairly well. Pretty much the same presentation that I was doing in person, now it's being done through Zoom. And, you know, Erica and I are working, like I mentioned, to identify programs and services that are still active and applying that COVID-19 tag to them. So to the community residents that are able to identify those services that are currently active. In regards to the public marketing campaign, it's working tremendously. Before we started the public marketing campaign a couple of weeks ago, we were at right around 500 monthly users. I checked our analytics this morning and we have 1600 users for this month alone. So the public marketing campaign is working. It's a combination of radio ads and digital ads and some TV ads, I believe, that have been rolling out. We are seeing the benefits of that public marketing campaign in regards to the analytics. I would say about 70% are English speaking households that are accessing our webpage, and about 30% from Spanish speaking homes. So that's pretty much the update that I have for CVHIP.
Okay. Thank you, Alejandro. Does anybody have questions for him? Hearing none, we'll move on to old business, the homeless initiative update. Who will be giving us information on that? Is that you, Donna?
We must have lost her.
Okay.
She'll be right back. She lost video.
Okay, so will we wait for her? Is she the one in charge of that grant?
So I will take it from, I will take this item. One of the funding that we have been using in the past has been supporting the summer cooling centers. And with the summer season here already, I think it is important that we have a conversation about it. We asked Greg to send us a summary of what the needs are in Coachella Valley and addressing these from a collaborative perspective rather than isolated cities, how it has been handled sometimes in the past. So he submitted a document that you find in page 5 and 6. And Greg is on the line. We asked him to participate so he can provide further details on the request to support the cooling centers. Go ahead, Greg.
Yeah, thank you, Conrado. As everything COVID-19, everything changes on a daily basis. So I've actually been working with our Emergency Operations Center and we are submitting a plan to the state, to CalEOS, to fully fund all three cooling centers on a 24-hour basis for the three-month period. So that is great, great news for us. Instead of just doing it from the 7 p.m. to 7 a.m., actually operating them 24 hours to provide relief from heat both day and night. But additionally, is we're really gonna focus on the daytime operations, utilizing our various nonprofits, Path of Life, Martha's, CVRM, to actually get people into services and housing. So that's, and literally was just updated on the plan going forward yesterday. I still believe though, like we did last year, I'm working on space being donated. So if the healthcare district were to come in with any support, you know, even the $20,000 pot to put aside for basic, you know, minor utilities like the churches that experienced last year. But as far as right now, with my fingers crossed, we should have an answer within 5 days, the actual funding of the operations and all equipment required is gonna be covered. So happy to answer any questions on this. You did get a pretty detailed budget for three different options of time being open, as well as the brief summary as well.
Okay, thank you, Greg. Does anybody have questions for Greg at this time?
have a question. This is Alan. How does this interrelate with other cooling center programs in the Valley? Like I know in Cathedral City, the senior center is a cooling center. The Mary Pickford's a cooling center. And I don't see that. How does this interrelate with those activities?
Yeah, so a very great question, Alan, too, is basically they're two separate programs. So the traditional cooling centers are run by Community Action Partnership, CAP, in conjunction with a lot of our senior centers, et cetera. The Public Health Department and EMS are going through discussions now on how we're gonna set those up. Obviously, a lot of our senior centers, libraries are closed. And maybe for a little while. Obviously, too, it's a vulnerable population, and so we need to make sure there's social distancing going. How we've been approaching it so far in this initial heat is we are encouraging seniors and those affected by the heat to utilize their air conditioning, and then we're partnering them up with organizations that are actually helping to pay the increase in utility bills. The county will probably be actually utilizing some CARES funding to do some of that as well. But in conjunction with that, we are looking at some alternatives, say like some school gyms that are a lot larger that we can, you know, further social distance and wait. So that's kind of a separate program that operates. Unfortunately, a lot of our regular cooling centers, I'll call them, don't allow homelessness in them and for various reasons. So that's the whole intention of this program that we kind of piloted last year and that was highly successful.
Thank you.
Does anyone else have a question?
So, Greg, do you have a specific ask?
Like I said, if my ask would be from the district, and you were a partner last year, would be, say, I would just suggest like a $20,000 reserve fund for incidentals like utilities that might not be covered under the regular funding.
This is Carol. I had a few questions. Number one, the budget that it was submitted, is that for all three cooling centers?
No, so each budget would be one site, so you would triple that amount.
Okay, and then I missed the information about the Palm Springs location. I know that the boxing club is terribly crowded, and I'm not sure if it would be appropriate with this separation that we are required. Are you looking at any other sites?
So there's no one in the boxing club now. They haven't been for a couple of months. So we've moved all of them to the high school gym. For now we will keep that, but yes, we will look at other sites in order to try and social distance as much as possible.
Okay.
Did you ever confirm a Cathedral City site, Greg?
Not yet, Don. I'm still talking with Mark on that. So,
if this committee wants to recommend to the board that we fund three sites at $68,000 a month times how many months?
Well, that'd be 3 months. You're looking, over $600,000. It's not a cheap project.
Well, I know that. They do a good job. So we're looking at, do we have an exact amount? I mean, does the committee want to recommend to the board that we fund three cooling sites at 24 hours each?
Carol, to my point, I'm not asking the district to do that because I've been able to get that funding covered through state reimbursable money through FEMA.
Great.
So all I'm asking is that if the district wants to play a role in this, as I said, there could be some incidentals such as utility bills that some of the church, if we're utilizing a church has, that if we had a reserve pot of just say 20,000, and we may not even use any of it, but just so we would have that in place.
Okay. And I know at one of our meetings, we talked about the availability of hotel motel rooms for placing the homeless. And it was discussed that there may be an opportunity to purchase a hotel motel for this purpose in the future. Has anybody looking at that?
So As I mentioned earlier, the county's been operating our Project Room Key, which was the governor's proposal for to utilize hotel space for homeless individuals. We started that program a month before the governor even announced it. Mm-hmm. Additionally, we are in conversations now with the state on the actual purchase of three hotels in the county. One of those would be in the East Valley here. We're not sure where yet. Obviously, we'd have to get city buy-in and all that, but that is a plan that will happen. Utilizing pots of money that the governor's allocated for that. And then through the CV Housing First, through CBAG, we are actually have rented some hotel rooms for our, we kind of are treating them like our crisis stabilization unit apartments, but we're utilizing hotel rooms for that. So we've been able to increase our crisis stabilization temporary housing capacity in the valley here as well.
Okay, so your ask right now is for $20,000.
Yeah. And just as a reserve fund, and again, if we don't utilize it, you know, we'll revert back to the district.
Does does your budget include meals for at these centers?
Yes.
Thank you.
I want to make a motion to approve to set aside $20,000 for this project.
I'll second that.
All those in favor, say aye.
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 Okay, so the motion moves to the board for approval, to the board meeting for approval.
Can we do this for an item that's technically not on the agenda? Just a question, I'm all for it.
For what item that's not on the agenda, Alan? It is on the agenda and it says information and possible action.
Okay. Oh, okay. I was so busy looking at the title of the item that I never looked over to the right-hand side. Never mind.
Thank you, Alan.
Mm-hmm. Thank you all very much. I have to jump on to another call, but thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Greg.
Okay, so we'll move on to number two from old business, grant payment schedule. Is anybody going to give us that information?
Well, yeah. It's in your packet for review, information only on page 7. If anybody has any questions.
This is Carol. I had a question. We were talking earlier about a $1.2 million remaining in our budget for this year for programs. Has anybody addressed that before the end of the fiscal year?
That's in the district, not on the foundation.
Oh, got it. So my question is have we... Has there been a discussion about how these funds can be spent?
If you remember from May. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yes, we're working on it.
Okay, so you mentioned that maybe something would be coming to the board of directors meeting next week?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Does anybody else have questions for the staff regarding the information provided?
No.
No.
Okay, seeing no questions. Does anybody have any comments before we adjourn the meeting?
I have a question. Has there been any information, you know, about our legal restriction about advertising and recruiting nonprofits to apply for funding to the district? Has there been any discussion about how we might be able to get the word out that these funds are available to local nonprofits?
We have advertised these funds. It is up to the nonprofit organizations to understand and realize how they can use these funds. Doing more than that might be not
okay. An
awful act. So we have to be very careful on how we present this funding opportunity in our community.
I understand. When you go before the board for our next board meeting with a request for funding, do you have an idea how much you're for?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand the question.
Well, we have $1.2 million left in our budget. When you go to the board for our next board meeting with a request for funding, do you have an estimate of what that request is going to be?
It's going to be for over $700,000.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome.
That's district money, not foundation money, correct?
That's district money, yes. Right.
Yes. Okay. Does anybody else have any more comments or questions?
No.
Okay. All righty. So I want to adjourn the program committee at 1:22. Thank you all for your hard work.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a nice day.